Unfortunately, I now have a good cover story for why I'm going to be so brief. But the truth is, I didn't have that much to say anyway, so it's not going to be fun as well. I want you just to comment about principle, methodology, and approaches of Psak Halacha and issuing Psak Halacha in these areas. And the reason for that is that, again, the principles, the methodology, and approaches are not the same. We can't simply transpose what we know from Issa V'Hefer or other sections of Torah and simply apply it to these areas. And I just want to review together a few Narim Makomos which are known to all of us, just to review together and to remind ourselves. Gemara Shabbos and Daf Lamed, again a Gemara with which we're all familiar. Shol she'eva zu ve'eva miratan from the minnoi. Mal v'chabos v'sina v'nuva mekamei de'isha b'shabbat. Are you allowed to extinguish a candle on Shabbos to a cholish yesh l'sakon that it should be able to sleep? So the Gemara then begins with a long, long piece of Agadah, Shlomo, with Yochokma, etc. And then, after an omit of Gemara, the Tantrum returns to the original question and says, "Ul'inyan she'eva d'sha'ilma kadonechon, ner kuya ner v'nishmata shel adam kuya ner. Mutav tikav v'nero shel botav adam, v'tnei nero shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu." A candle is referred to as ner, the neshama is referred to as ner. Better, the human ner, the candle, be extinguished than the divine ner, the neshama, be extinguished. In other words, yes, you can put out the candle for the cholos to sleep on Shabbos. The Rashi is bothered. This is not really, I mean, the Psak Halacha is correct, but the presentation doesn't seem to be entirely correct. Rashi writes as follows, "Lavni hoka yolos kilo Shabbos." This is not really the technical source for the halacha, but because nefesh nafkalan may b'chai b'hem, v'lo sh'yamz b'hem. That, of course, as we all know, is the motto for tikkurat nefesh. Ela l'hat'iman hadova ba'agoda ha'moshefet v'talit. V'fisha yubo'im l'shnoa hadrosha. Again, this phrase should be understood in light of Rabbi Flam's presentation. V'fisha ho yubo'im l'shnoa hadrosha noshim v'amei oret. So Rashi here tells us a very, very important yisod, and that is that sometimes when a shaila is presented to a rav, not that the rav issues a psak, at other times when a shaila is presented to a rav, he has to do so, the psak has to be issued in a fashion that's Moshe Chatzalev. What does Moshe Chatzalev mean in contemporary terms? Well, again, and relating to contemporary issues, it means that it's not enough to say Osper when that is indeed the correct stuff that should be said. If the answer is that it's Osper, it should be said, it shouldn't be, and it should be said without apologetics, without accommodationism. But you can't simply say Osper. It's critical that Rabbonim provide a rationale to explain the stuff, to account for the psak. And that's our fulfillment of Agoda HaMoshata Tzalev in issuing a psak halacha. When one views retrospectively the profound influence which the Rav, the Zichrono Livracha, exerted on our generation, of course it was due to his incredible awesome erudition. However, he wouldn't have had that influence if it wasn't combined, if that erudition hadn't been combined with a singular ability to present Pitkei Halacha in a fashion that was Moshe Chassalit. And if we'll, even if, in Halavai we should do that, even if we'll succeed in being Mechaveh in the Data Hagdola, in what the Pesach Halacha should be, unless we also succeed in the form of presentation, in the mode in which the Pesach is issued, we won't succeed in doing Moshe Chassalavava. And I think we all know this from experience. Just to remind ourselves of two famous cards to letters, two famous examples in which this koach of the Rav was so evident. If you reread the famous essay, Confrontation, where the Rav banned interfaith dialogue, so basically, if you cut through all the beautiful philosophical jargon, all the beautiful Torah, so basically the Rav gave a class on Tish and said it's an Isagram of a Homo. That's basically what he said, in no uncertain terms, very, very unequivocally. And yet, if he had simply done that, I don't know that the Pesach would have carried the day. As a matter of fact, I suspect that it would not have carried the day. And the reason it did was because of, as in keeping with Ad Yomar and Shabbos, the Pesach was presented not the Chaybohem Velo Shiyomus Bohem, but Mutar Shetikaza Nero Shel Basav Adam Mitnei Nero Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The way in which the Rav presented the Pesach was as critical as the Pesach itself. And I think in these issues, the women's issues, that is certainly the case. Another example with which we're all familiar, I choose this example only so we can review it in the Rav's own words rather than in any inadequate paraphrasing. In one of the Rav's various English tshuvas about mechitzas, so there too, again, it's impossible, I think, not just this time, I think it's impossible to imagine a more firm, resolute, unequivocal stand than the Rav adopts in these tshuvas. And yet, again, it's done with Agoda HaMoshechus Saleh. For instance, the entire concept of family pews is in contradiction to the Jewish spirit of prayer. Prayer means communion with the master of the world, and therefore withdrawal from all and everything. During prayer, a man must feel alone, removed, isolated. He must then regard the Creator as an only friend from whom alone he can hope for support and consolation. I think that the point is clear. It wasn't just the sack, it wasn't just the stand, it was his ability to communicate, to explain, and thereby motivate. A second critical element in addressing such shailos is that it has to be done with a clear sense of empathy. And the empathy, that can't be a posture. It has to be genuine. But that genuine empathy must be clearly projected. Otherwise, certainly if we don't feel the empathy, and it's not difficult to empathize, just imagine for a moment all of the men in the audience, imagine for a moment that right now, with a snap of a finger, all the restrictions of tznius, which bind women, which don't bind us, all of a sudden were imposed upon us. It wouldn't be so easy to accept. It wouldn't be such an easy adjustment to make. So I don't think having that sense of genuine empathy is at all difficult. So it's a sense of empathy which should be felt, and once genuinely felt, it has to be projected, because otherwise we'll be viewed as just totally irrelevant, as not understanding the realia which prompt and provoke questions, and then the response will be, well, with all due respect, if you don't understand the question, you certainly can't answer it appropriately. And here too, I'll just show you, I meant to bring the volume, I forgot to. Take a look in Adrosha, which is summarized by Rabbi Bezdin in his book, Reflections of the Rav. It's around page 150. I jot it down here. The Rav darshins the psukim when Moshe Rabbeinu complains to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ha'anokhi ha'risi et ha'amazah im ha'anokhi l'tihu ki somar elai so'ehu v'chakapa kasha yisa ha'omen ha'ayomek. That Moshe Rabbeinu complains to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you're asking me to care for Bnei Yisrael the way a mother nurses an infant. That Moshe Rabbeinu, until now, the Rav explained, had thought that being a Malamed meant being a teacher. And now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that to be a Malamed, it doesn't suffice just to teach, but rather the same sense of identity, total identification and empathy which a mother feels from the nursing child is a prerequisite for the Rav, for the Malamed, to feel for the Mani Yisrael, to feel for the members of Kol Yisrael. And that's what that recognition on the part of Moshe Rabbeinu, that he thought was too much. And the Rav there makes the point that in our generation, it's not enough to be a Malamed, it's not enough to be a Rav, it's not enough to be a Manhig, but that the Rabbonus has to be conducted Kasha Yisa Omen Hayonik. And he refers this specifically to a sense of empathy and a sense of identification. And without that, again, the psak may be the correct one. There's no, as Rabbi Klum indicated, there is clear sources, there are clear sources in Halacha why many of these initiatives are wrong, but the question has to be accepted and addressed with the empathy of Kasha Yisa Omen Atayonik. Yet a third element, which is especially prominent in these questions, is that we have to have a keen understanding of the reality and the ability to discern the Torah's prescription for this reality. The tshuva of the Zalman Sirotkin, which Rabbi Flau mentioned, is a perfect example of that. That one has to first be able to assess the Messias accurately before one knows what Maimon Chazal is to be invoked. And to simply cite precedent, and the story with the Rav illustrated it beautifully, to simply blindly cite precedent without recognizing and discerning whether or not the reality is the same as it was when that precedent was established can lead us astray. This point is made very, very powerfully by Rav Schechter in his introduction to his Sefer Ikrei HaTzon. He refers to the Gemara in Sanhedrin where HaKadosh Baruch Hu faults Yehoshua for imposing a cherem on Yericho, which was subsequently violated by Offa. That Ato Zoramto Lem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu faults, he indicts Yehoshua. So the Mashiach Asakasha, that Yehoshua was simply following in the footsteps of Moshe Rabbeinu. Gemara Sanhedrin, there in the same sugya, tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu, in the milchamos which he had conducted, which he had waged, had a similar tactic. He also imposed the cherem. And the Mashiach says that things had changed. Because once Ovus HaYarden, so then Ovus, the mutual responsibility, became binding. And given that change of circumstances, so then the course of action was different. What was an appropriate course of action had changed. And this as well also characterized and was one of the secrets to the Rav's success in dealing with these shaylos. And again, to take an example where we can review his own words rather than paraphrasing. So the Rav, this is from the Chumash Drasha, in explaining his own metamorphosis in terms of supporting Mizrahi, so the Rav said that the years of the Nazi Holocaust and the rise of the state convinced me of the justness of the path of our movement. Again, a clear discernment that sometimes in halacha, in certain areas of halacha, as the reality changes, so too does the internal prescription of halacha as to how that reality should be dealt with. Yet a fourth element in terms of Pesach Halacha in these areas, which we need to review and remind ourselves of, is the importance of not only details of Halacha, but values of Halacha as well. Sometimes in discussing these shaylos, we fail to see the forest. We're so preoccupied with the trees that we lose sight of the forest. And certainly a lot of this discussion about women's tefillah group is a very good example of this. It illustrates this. The discussion over, well, may they touch the Sefer Torah, may they not touch the Sefer Torah, and yet the broader issue of what underlies and what is implied by the women's tefillah group, and whether or not that is consistent with the Torah's understanding of tefillah, of Avodah Shevalev. So those issues get lost. Those issues get lost. And many, many of these shaylos, the more important angle and the more important perspective are the values of Torah rather than any individual detail of Torah. Just to illustrate many of these aspects and elements of Pesach which we're reviewing now, and again, this was not intended and certainly wasn't any chidush to any of you, so we'll review one more source with which we're all familiar, and that is the famous tshuva of the Tzvi Eish about celebrating a bat mitzvah. The Tzvi Eish writes, V'yeshtonim in Chele Gimel, Simen Tzadi Gimel, V'yeshtonim neged ahetah shel chagigas ha-bat mitzvah, mishum shu neged min ha-gadarat ha-kodim. A powerful argument. Shelo nohagu min ha-gzah. Avol be'emes, ein zu tana. אבל אשר נשתנו הדור שינוי עוצם. השפועת הרחוב עוקרת מלב קונה ונערה חוזיק של יהדות, והבונות מסכנתות בבות היסי ונוחים או בבות היסי וחילונים, שאינם שולטים להשביש בלב תלמידיהם אבא לתורת ישראל ומנהוגי התורה של היהדות השלמה. עכשיו מוטל עלינו לרכז כל כוחותינו בחינוכם של הבונות. And he continues. So he just one more line here. Rishua Tahigayan Hayosha, the Chovas Ha'ikaron Ha'Pedagogi Mechayes Kemat Lochul Gam Lebas Es Hagaot Lefiyah Hamitzvah. והפלאיה הזו שעושים בין הבונים והבונות זה נוגע לחגיגת הבגרות פוגעת כושר ברגש האנושי של הבת הבגרת אשר בשלוחים אחרים כבר זיכור בזיכיון האמנציפציה כביוכל. So again, it's quite clear that the sense of empathy, the keen discernment of what the Messias is with which he was dealing, and the presentation, Agoda Moshachas Talev. But let's perhaps elaborate on this example of Bat Mitzvah and try to apply it somewhat more concretely. So given this, I'd say not heter, but this mandate of the 3 days, so how do we, of course, the Vav Yosef has as well in Yichav Adav, and Rig Beis also, where he disagrees with Rav Moshe in the Igros Moshe. How is this translated practically? So interestingly, the 3 days himself says it. B'tnai, he says, the celebration should take place Shaharav Yidrash B'tnei Habat HaBoger as Drosha Ma'alifa Ulahatira Liyo Shomeret Mehayom V'hala HaMitzvot HaIkariyos B'dvarim Shebeino LaMokom Kashrut, Shabbat, Paras HaMishkofa HaTipur V'chinuch HaBonim V'chovat HaIdud V'hachidot L'ba'al B'lim L'toro U'b'shmirat Mitzvot והיוסו שקודו לוסף עיניהו באיש שהוא תלמד חוכם ויראי שמיים. I think the point which the Sri Deish is trying to make is that the Bat Mitzvah celebration, and this is most critical, should not be an attempt to simulate or emulate a Bar Mitzvah celebration. And there shouldn't be a unisex celebration for girls that's held at age 12 and for boys that's held at age 13. If that's what the Bar Mitzvah celebration will represent, and that's what it will consist of, then certainly it has no place. There's no question about that. But such a celebration has no place. Again, trying to recreate as much as possible what a Bar Mitzvah celebration entails, thereby implying or encouraging or suggesting some kind of egalitarianism which is clearly antithetical to the halacha's distinction and differentiation, not discrimination again, but distinction and differentiation between the genders. So clearly that is wrong. And what the Bat Mitzvah celebration, what has to be, what the details of the Bat Mitzvah celebration must reflect is that this is different fundamentally from a Bar Mitzvah. How so? One of the particular questions which we were asked to address is under what circumstances does the Bat Mitzvah address people for she deliver a Dvar Torah. So I don't know, I'm going to sit down in a minute and allow Rabbi Slam to get up and overrule me. But I would think that this is a perfect opportunity to accentuate the difference between a Bar Mitzvah and a Bat Mitzvah. Clearly, the inescapable conclusion is that the Torah imposed higher standards of tznius for women than for men. I think that is something which is indisputable. I don't think anyone is going to question that. And given that tznius is a mila, given that tznius is a route, an avenue to kedusha, that shouldn't be experienced or interpreted as a burden, but rather as opportunity and bracha. That being the case, I think that has to come across in the bat mitzvah celebration as opposed to a bar mitzvah celebration. So if the bat mitzvah is inclined to speak, the parents are inclined that she should speak, so maybe it would be appropriate, and again, not in a sense of repression or suppression, but rather in a sense of accentuating and celebrating tzniyus, that instead of speaking in front of everyone, she should speak. Very often bar mitzvahs have the like Polish language, right? The 3 parts, 4 parts, 5 parts. So maybe the appropriate forum would be that she should speak amongst her friends, in a more private setting, a more private forum. And therefore, again, there is opportunity and there is occasion for Divrei Torah. And yes, there can also be a public celebration. But this difference would accentuate that the Bat Mitzvah celebration is not our attempt to, again, to make everything the same and obliterate differences which clearly exist in the halacha between men and women. It would also seem to be appropriate, same way there's a tradition that the bar mitzvah boys talk about mitzvah tefillin. As the Sri D.A. says, it would seem to be appropriate that if a bat mitzvah is going to speak or is going to be addressed, that she too should focus on mitzvahs which are especially within the domain of women. And I think that too would send a very clear and powerful message that, again, that the celebration is not a way of suggesting or promoting an egalitarianism, but is rather to celebrate the uniqueness and distinctiveness of a bat mitzvah, and in no way to try to identify it in terms of importance, yes, but in terms of content, to identify it or reduce it to bar mitzvah. Perhaps one other example of trying to apply some of the principles and perspectives we mentioned, and with this I'll conclude. One of the major questions halacha l'maaseh today, question of women serving on shul boards, serving as shul presidents. Here, the Rav, the Chacham Lezrocha, was asked many times. This is just in terms of the stock, without the Agada HaMashachu Salei, but just what the kernel, what the stock is. And the Rav consistently said that it's also, that it can't be. That it, not only that it should not be, but that it can't be. And for the reasons of Svara. The reasons of Svara. I think all that one knows. That's in terms of the show. Certainly have the Svara to make their life miserable if there's nothing else, right? I'm not sure why this question, given that there is an unequivocal stock from the Rav, I'm not sure why this question would be reopened or revisited either within Rabbinic alumni or within RCA. I'm not aware of any fundamental change in the Metzius which would suggest that the question has to be reevaluated. So in terms of what the stock is, I think there is a very clear and unequivocal stock which the Rav issues. But when that stock is communicated, I think it simply can't say it's also, and the Rav talks in that it's also. That's not enough. I mean, that's enough for us to know what it is we're trying to present. But that can't be the presentation. And the presentation has to include an understanding of what it means to be precluded from Svara. And that Svara is not viewed by the Torah as a form of fulfillment. That wielding authority is not viewed as any type of personal fulfillment, and it's not thought to be gratifying. And if it is any form of fulfillment, or if it is gratifying, so something is terribly, terribly wrong in the person who's wielding the Svara. And the ideal, again, of Hatzmei Alechet in Hashem Elokecha, that Svara is something which somehow or other has to be. It has to be, but it in no way is it a vehicle or is it a spur to Avodas Hashem, to coming closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if anything, it just imposes extra challenges. V'chulu, which has to be developed at a greater length than time allows now, but it's in that kind of context that the Rav Tzak should be communicated and should be shared. At this point, I think we're way behind schedule, so I'll stop, and if there are any questions, we'll answer.
Can I
get
with you, Ben, please? Last minute, Chris. Last minute,
Chris.
We'll get with Rabbi Flau, we'll take up our request to offer the bat mitzvah question, and then we'll open the floor for a couple of questions.
I want to thank Rabbi Twersky for a beautiful presentation, and I always love to take challenges to my colleagues, and the one that you gave me about the bat mitzvah is a very, very interesting question. Two of the 3 days you quoted is a tshuva that I've taught many, many times, especially when I was in Stern College. I went through the tshuva from beginning to end, and I've been honest with you, all the literature on the topic of bat mitzvah, the Moshe's tshuvas, and tshuvas of Avadi Yosef. And the question of whether or not the bat mitzvah should say a drasha is something that I want to share with you my impression this evening. The question of women giving shiurim, public lectures, to men and to women, or let's say to men, I found two historical precedents in the world of halacha, back to painting in Maran Makama. Going back to the time of a gadol whose name was Rav Eli from Baghdad. He was a gaon in Baghdad approximately 900 years ago. This Rav Shmuel had a daughter who was a Bekiya in all of Tanakh, in all of the Talmud. And what he used to have his daughter do is give a daily shiur in Tanakh. She used to give a shiur to the boys in the shiur in Tanakh. However, he did it in a very unique way. He's the guru of the binyan derech halon echad. He had her in a tower. Mamsha batko. She gave the shiur, and the boys were below. Hatamid bechutz lemata. Ve'enem reyaisa, which means they heard the shiur. She gave the shiur, but he was mocked on the concern of sneer. The second source I have is the truth of the mashal, which you have in your makaris as well. And this is even more telegic. The Mashal brings down that there was a Rebbe in Rabbanus Miriam, who was the Buber of the Mashal of Lublin. And let me quote you what she did. Topsha yeshiva kamashonim, v'yasha b'oyol v'ilmus mehem, v'amar halacha v'fneha b'chulim muflagim. She gave a shear for the advanced Talmidim in yeshiva behind the mechitza, halacha l'mata each and every day. She was made a Rashi ha-yeshiva. Fascinating. Now the two common denominators between these two occurrences is number one is that the Rosh Yeshivas over here allow girls to teach Torah to the boys, which is revolutionary. Even in YU today, I don't think we're going to go that far. I don't think we would allow a woman to come in to give a shit to the boys, even behind the mechitza. I don't think we would allow it. And number two is that they were mocked to do it behind the mechitza or do it from the tower above. I mean, they didn't want, you know, visualization of the women or girls saying the Torah. What's fascinating to me is I will understand in certain of the circles where, quite obviously, they're very makbid on tavuvos between Nashim and Anashim. I wouldn't expect in those circles for a bat mitzvah girl to get up and say a drasha with me on the eita because the derech klal, that is not their nihuk. What is fascinating to me, however, is being invited to yeshiva dinners whether it's Beis Yaakov dinners, tag dinners, and even dinners of MPJ, that for some reason there is no hesitation that when it comes to guests of honor, it's women to get up with the Am Ve'eda and to say Divrei Torah, Sifa Divrei Torah, in front of Am Ve'eda. Nobody says anything, as if to say that they have no problem with them doing it. I mean, I was at the MTA dinner, MTJ dinner a couple of years ago, where you had Reuven, Rav David, and all the Gedolei Hakadosh Yeshiva, and a woman got up and she gave a drasha for half an hour. Nobody got up and walked out. So my question is where do you divide the line saying that from teaching Torah, giving a drasha publicly in the context of teaching is prohibited, but to give a drasha from a podium in a dinner where everybody's looking at her and all the lights are geared to her is actually halachic for mitzvah. But there's a stir in the name vein in that type of nihu. So I'm saying, even in that machana, I don't understand it. But the machana that I'm a rabbi, and perhaps most of the rabbanim here are rabbanim in, most of the time, most circumstances, women do get up, whether it's for religious purposes, and to say a drasha at a simcha, or at a political meeting or a community meeting, and by definition we allow women to address the Olam concerning the phenomenon that are taking place. I've never heard anybody in that context raising any type of issue. So my question is, if you allow a woman to get up publicly to say her chavizdat concerning a political issue or a communal issue, and allow her to take the time and effort to make the presentation publicly without a mechitza, how can we at the same time justify that when she's a bat mitzvah to say to her that you can't make a public drasha on your devat Torah, on your bat mitzvah in front of the Olam because of tznius? Once again, children sense hypocrisy in tznius. So if the Olam itself is being makabel for whatever reason, and I can't answer why, that we're allowing women to make drashas from podiums at dinners and be guests of honor, be given covet, and allowed to address people publicly, even in the Heilig of Farakli, I can tell you. But when they am ve'eda, the women come and get up at public gatherings and they make public statements and nobody gets up and walks out of the room. I don't think we're able to legislate in that type of milieu to tell a bat mitzvah girl that because you're a bat mitzvah and you're machliv in tznius, you can't say a devat Torah. Because the girl's going to say there's a stira. And the best way to turn a child off is for them to feel this hypocrisy taking place. I think it's a cultural problem.